In July of this year, just under 6 months ago, a fire at the 36-story Marco Polo high-rise killed four people and caused more than $100 million in damage.
The building did not have fire sprinklers. It was built in 1971 before sprinklers were required by law for new construction.
The Honolulu Fire Department hasn't yet determined a cause for the fire, and a number of issues raised by the fire have not yet been resolved.
Today we're asking listeners to weigh in by calling us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 on Neighbor Islands.
Our in-studio guests are Socrates Bertakos, Assistant Chief with the Honolulu Fire Department. Chief Bertakos manages HFD's Fire Prevention Bureau for HFD.
Carol Fukunaga is the Honolulu City Council member who represents District 6, including portions of Makiki, Downtown, Punchbowl, Halawa, Kalihi, Aiea, and Nu'uanu. She's the vice chair of the Public Health and Safety Committee and chairs the council's Public Works, Infrastructure, and Sustainability Committee.
And Jane Sugimura, the president of the Hawaii Council of Association of Apartment Owners, will be joining us. Welcome to you all. Now, do you live in a building without sprinklers? Have you experienced a residential fire? Would you live in a condo in a building without sprinklers? These are some of the many issues raised. So let's hear from you. You can call us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689.
Obviously, it takes a dramatic event like this, Chief Bertakos, Council Member Fukunaga, to bring this to the attention of the public. What kind of reactions have you been hearing in the 6 months since?
Well, certainly at the City Council, we have heard from a wide range of residents as well as technical and professional experts. And, you know, I think the fact that the fire was such a dramatic occurrence, it has really propelled fire safety into everyone's sort of high priority set of issues, especially for people who live in condominiums. You know, it's a very kind of unique circumstance. I have been fortunate to represent many of the condo communities for, you know, over 20 plus years. And typically the kinds of issues that condo residents face are different from what most other people face. You know, when the power goes out, your elevator stops, you may have to carry people who are no longer mobile up and down stairwells, you know, and make sure that those are lit in the dark. Certainly when you have fires, you have new challenges that people who live in single family homes don't necessarily face. So it's a really big issue for condo residents.
And the fire department, in the wake of the Marco Polo, of course, has to look at how can we best provide recommendations for public safety to the administration, council, to our whole community, and what can we do to improve ourselves. So this includes legislation, our training, our inspection, pre-planning practices, the equipment that we use, and we have to take a look at ourselves and say, are we doing the best job possible, and how can we educate and inform the public to help take care of themselves?
Makes sense. We spoke earlier this morning with Council Chair Ron Minor to kind of, and this outlines a bit of the issue that the city faces now. Let's hear that soundbite.
Bill 69 is still being considered by the council. I really believe that it's important for the council to pass an effective law to promote improved fire safety in residential high-rise buildings. You know, the city really, I think, needs to explore every possible means of preventing another tragedy like the Marco Polo fire. And so in this regard, the council is considering Bill 69 with respect to the installation of automatic fire sprinkler systems in certain condo buildings. However, the council also recognizes that the installation of these systems can be hugely expensive. That's why the council has been taking a detailed, methodic approach in trying to come up with solutions. And I've also taken the position that in addressing this serious issue, the city needs to balance our efforts at improved residential high-rise fire safety with the economic realities facing our condo owners and associations. So in that regard, in conjunction with the council's consideration of Bill 69, I have also supported measures to provide financial assistance to condo owners and associations to help them to cover the costs of installing fire sprinkler systems in their buildings. And I finally would also like to note that given the importance of the issue, that the council did establish a permitted interaction group, which is comprised of several key council members whose districts would be affected by any fire sprinkler or safety measure that we would pass. And so in that regard, the council will also be carefully considering the recommendations of this community interaction group going forward.
Are you optimistic that a solution can be found?
I am. But again, it's a complex issue. It's a matter of trying to resolve the details. My committee, the committee that I chair, the Executive Matters Committee, will be taking up Bill 69, and other measures, again, will also be considered in the coming week.
Well, it's a complex issue, no argument there, right?
Absolutely. However, this time around, I think we've had the benefit of many more technological advances. So part of the permitted interaction group process has given us an opportunity to convene discussions with experts to put that information out very broadly, you know, on our council website, to solicit comments from individual condo owners and associations, field questions, you know, from people who raise them and have responses provided by the various agencies. So the level of what I consider really top-notch information and a wide range of details is really that much more available than it was in the past, where we may not really have known with certainty how many buildings would be affected and who would be impacted. You know, one of the things that the fire department has done is made available a list in kind of a descending order of number of stories, you know, of the individual buildings, of all of the condos that would be impacted by the mandatory retrofit requirement. So in sharing that information online, we are really looking to encourage individual condo properties and their owners to examine what will work for them and to evaluate, you know, in the context of the proposal as it stands.
Now, Chief Bertakos, take us back, because I know right after the fire, Mayor Kirk Caldwell was, you know, right out there saying, look, we need to have mandatory sprinklers in all our high-rises, particularly our older ones. But we've moved from that.
So the first thing we had to do was find out exactly which those high-rises were. So as best as we could, because we had to come up with a list relatively quickly, we found about 360 buildings that fit the bill that are over 75 feet to their highest floor where people are living, and that's the definition of a high-rise building, and are not sprinklered throughout the building. The Residential Fire Safety Advisory Committee took a look at that and right away saw that the buildings are different. We looked at the international existing building code. We looked at the National Fire Protection Association Standard 101, the life safety code, and we started to see what other ordinances were looked at around the country. And we pretty quickly said that buildings that have exterior access for all the units going straight to a stairway, it's different. The fire and smoke's not going to collect in a hallway. It'll dissipate in the air. We could take those off the list. And that took quite a few off. And then we said at 7, 8, 9 floors, that's about the same. The fire department could respond pretty quickly. We'd start our recommendation with 10 floors and up and full-length interior corridors. That gets us to about 150 buildings. Instead of 360 buildings and 40,000 units, we are now looking at about 151 buildings or so with full-length interior corridors that the Residential Fire Safety Advisory Committee recommended to be retrofit with sprinklers. We also said that we thought it would be a good idea for all the buildings to be evaluated according to the risk factors by a licensed designer, an engineer, or an architect, and that would help them look at seeing what they need to comply with fire code and building code besides the retrofit recommendation.
We have a question submitted from a caller, David from Honolulu. He says he's a board member at his building. He has a question. Is there going to be any committee that evaluates the final list of buildings that are going to be mandated to do the sprinklers, or is the last list that just came out the final list?
I believe the caller or the questioner is referring to the list that the fire department issued in early December, which responded to a number of questions that we posed regarding a couple of the buildings in my district. Kukui Plaza, Queen Emma Complex, I believe Mott Smith, Laniloa were among, you know, three of the large complexes that were sort of added to the list in their totality. And part of what we have been seeking to do is work closely with the condo associations and owners to see what they think would be most practical for them. If they went through a fire safety evaluation process, then determined, you know, what the costs were for appropriate levels of fire safety improvements in their building, and whether or not they think they could swing the costs of individual retrofits to, retrofits to individual units. And it does become pretty complicated, you know, when you have large buildings. I would say Mott Smith Laniloa is a good example of a large building that's sort of square shaped. It has 454 units. And so when you think of the costs of retrofitting each of those individual units, you can begin to appreciate what each condo association and property management company and condo owners really have to do in order to evaluate, you know, what would it take?
We've heard ballpark figures for individual units, what, $8,000, $10,000 range? Is that more?
And higher. That's the low end of the range for fully retrofitting common areas and individual units. So $8,000 to $22,000 was the examples we used. And some people have gotten quotes of higher. So we used a rough figure of around $14,000 or $15,000 per unit for full sprinklering. If you were to retrofit only common areas, probably be a third to half that much. But what we were initially only talking about, and still are right now, the cost of sprinkling the entire building, including the unit. So eight's a little low. That would be the lowest side. It's something higher than that.
Cost is a big issue, and I have a friend who lives in a high-rise in Makiki. And he said they just had to retrofit their plumbing, and it was a big hit. It was like $30,000 per unit.
That is pretty much the norm, because with older buildings, you know, you do have things like elevator repairs and upgrades. You have spalling, which on the exterior of many of the buildings has been a very big cost item. Plumbing systems, etc. Those are all major maintenance requirements that the buildings do have to attend to no matter what. That's currently required. I think for many of the older buildings, what they have also identified is the fact that some of them have asbestos in the ceilings, you know, those kind of well-known popcorn ceilings, which would also need to be modified if you did install, you know, some sort of sprinkler system in the individual units. So it's not just the cost of the sprinkler system itself that individual buildings have to take into account, but what other changes may have to be made for the building that they are occupying that may not necessarily only be the sprinklers, but it may be they may have to install new water systems, they may have to install facilities, you know, that will house some of the adaptive equipment. So it's, you know, it's really a very individualized kind of circumstance, because each building may be constructed in a different way. For example, the fire department did exclude those buildings that have exterior hallways, and many of the Makiki buildings or punch bowl buildings are among those, you know, 10 to 15 stories, where you'll see those long, skinny buildings where the hallways are on the outside of the buildings. And so those types of buildings would not be subject to the mandatory retrofit requirement in the same way, because they have another alternative available to homeowners.
Let me just interject quickly. If you're just joining us, our guests in the studio are Socrates Bartakos, Assistant Chief with the Honolulu Fire Department, and Honolulu City Council Member Carol Fukunaga. We're asking you about fire safety, particularly with regard to high-rises, as we approach the six-month anniversary of the Marco Polo fire. Do you live in a building without sprinklers? Have you ever experienced a residential fire? Would you live in a condo building without sprinklers? Let us hear from you. The numbers to call are 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689. We have a caller on the line from Waikiki. This is Tim. Tim, can you hear me?
Yes.
What's your question?
Well, it's not a question. It's just I would ask the panel to clarify. I think there's a lot of people confused or they're concerned because the initial bill, Bill 69, had a mandate that was going to require sprinklers inside the unit. That's off the table now, and I think a lot of residents aren't aware that that portion is off the table.
Is it off the table?
If you look at the state law, a condo's ownership rights is basically the airspace inside a unit, and it's questionable whether or not any government entity can encroach upon that airspace. So just to clarify, I think people are confused and concerned that we're still talking about a bill that is installing sprinklers inside a condo unit, and that clearly is off the table.
Well, just to clarify, you know, the proposal that is before the Executive Matters and Legal Affairs Committee proposed CD1 to Bill 69 as well as Bill 107, which was designed to combine the financing proposals with that mandatory sprinkler requirement. Both call for mandatory retrofits. And part of the reason that the Permitted Interaction Group adopted, you know, the Bill 107 model was to give condo owners an opportunity to respond to that proposal and to let us know what they felt was reasonable and workable from their individual building standpoint. So the proposal is not yet off the table. We have been hearing from many, many condo associations and owners, but it was a starting point, and we hope to arrive at a sort of middle ground that will actually help address fire safety while providing some flexibility for owners and condos.
So are we waiting for the task group to come up with some recommendations then? Is that where we're at?
At this point, I think the next thing that we would be looking at doing is the Permitted Interaction Group that held a community forum on December 18th, which Assistant Chief Protakos joined us at. We'll be compiling a report, you know, covering all of the testimonies and comments that were received, how people weighed in on the various alternatives, and we would be providing that report to the council, which would then be able to consider, you know, the perspectives of individual condos that are going to be affected while we try and find the happy medium.
And while cost is a big issue, Chief, can you talk about the technologies that are out there that might maybe bring some of these costs down that maybe aren't fully developed yet?
Well, for one thing, sprinklers have been used in newer buildings for a long time. So it's an existing technology. There's ways to do it. You don't necessarily have to dig out the ceilings. There's some existing plumbing that can be used. And the ARFSAC group also put in some measures that would reduce the cost, such as not requiring sprinklers on balconies or in elevators, and finding ways to reduce the cost of the system, the pump for sprinkling. That's one part of it. Another part of it is on the horizon, there are some other systems that would meet the code requirements for sprinklers, such as spray mist. Plumas is one company that does that. Those systems are not being used regularly in residential applications so much now, but they have some promise for the future, and that's why the committee recommended staying close to the code, because the code, over time, as it gets updated, recognizes all those alternate technologies, and the authority having jurisdiction, the building folks at DPP or the fire department can also recognize those as alternatives to just only a sprinkler system.
And as we go forward, I know cost is a big thing, and the Board of Water Supply is going to be talking about upgrading their system of delivering clean water to everybody, and it is going to require a big rate hike. So how are your constituents looking at that?
Well, they haven't weighed in just yet. You know, the Board of Water Supply's proposal was just recently unveiled this past week. So I think that is going to be a consideration. But we're hopeful that by soliciting a lot of feedback from condo owners and their associations, that we'll have a better range of criteria to work from, and that we would be able to, you know, look to see what would be most practical for the largest number of people.
Right, but the cost, big concern. You know, we always hear a lot about rail, but, you know, these are issues that we really need to grapple with going forward.
Absolutely. And because, you know, we would also have to balance whether or not the city or city and state or others would be able to help offset some of those costs. Some of the numbers that we've seen so far are fairly small in terms of what the city might be able to contribute, you know, compared against the number of units that would be affected. Under the current listing of roughly about 151 buildings, we're talking about 22,000 units. And so, you know, when you do the math, it's not a simple solution, and certainly the remedies may or may not necessarily be cheap ones. And so that's kind of why we've really tried to focus on what kinds of building, you know, we're talking about, and what individual condo associations and their residents can do to improve their own fire prevention types of strategies. Because a number of buildings have come forward and said, you know, they are now looking at fire drills and different kinds of practices. They're doing a lot more education. They're working more closely with the fire department. And I think all of this is really intended to move them, you know, towards a position where they think that they will be able to be eligible, you know, to obtain an exemption from the mandatory retrofit requirement if they can show that they are doing A, B, C, D, and E.
Chief Protagonist, you've made it your culiana throughout your career to educate people about what they can do. And at some point in this discussion, people who live in condos are going to say, what can I as an individual owner be doing? I'm wondering, in the context of the Marco Polo fire, what factors, safety factors, made it as bad as it was, made it spread the way it did?
I can speak to that. And I would say that the first thing that people can do right now, before we have made any changes to our ordinances, to obey the ones that we have completely and thoroughly. And that means that your alarm system needs to be in working. Whatever fire protection systems you have in there have to be checked and working. Sprinklers, if you have them. If you don't, it's the standpipes, the wet standpipe systems, the alarm system, the elevator, the corridor doors, the stairwells, the stairwell door assemblies, the exit signs, the lightings for the egress and the exits, making sure that there's no holes between the walls and the ceilings and the floors. Those are all requirements that people should be looking at in their buildings right now, including updating those systems as they're no longer able to maintain them or buy the parts from them. On top of that, and their extinguishers, on top of that, they should educate themselves on what to do in the event of emergency. And I really applaud all those folks that are getting together and asking us questions, developing their safety teams in their building. All of that is very important. While we're considering doing additional factors such as a retrofit of sprinklers or not, they can be doing all those things right now.
Chief, which of those factors you just mentioned, safety factors, were absent at the Marco Polo fire? What was omitted?
At the Marco Polo fire, and I answered this for the city council, there was no fire code violation in particular. Some doors were open, but we don't know if that's because the occupants left. At the time of the last inspection, all the solid core doors to the corridors were closed. Everything else had passed. The elevator broke, but we don't know if that just happened that day. The elevator had passed its last inspection, too. The alarm system had passed the inspection, but it's old, and I believe they're looking at replacing it right now. So it's not necessarily that you have a fire code violation right now, but you should be looking at updating. If you have solid core doors and you don't have closers, you need automatic closers, you need to get that. If your seals on your stairwell doors are looking kind of worn, you need to replace that. If your alarm system panel showing some trouble lights once in a while and it's difficult to hear down at the other end of the hall, you should be definitely saving your money to replace it. If you don't have a recall and emergency power for your elevator, you got to look at doing that too. And those are all things everyone should be considering right now.
We are just joined by Jane Sukimura, president of the Hawaii Council of Association of Apartment Owners.
Hello,
Jane,
sorry.
Thanks for joining us. It's good to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, this is obviously an issue that has a great deal of effect on your membership. What kind of discussions have you been hearing since
We've been hearing a lot of discussion from our members, mainly because of the issue. The installation of fire sprinklers is a very expensive issue. And, you know, a lot of our members are older buildings that were built in the 70s. And, you know, so they have a whole lot of other challenges, like spalling, because they're concrete buildings. And elevator renovations, which cost millions of dollars. And so, you know, they have to, you know, pay for these ongoing repairs. And now, you know, when you add retrofitting of fire sprinklers, which is also a very expensive project because these buildings have asbestos. Most of the buildings in question, the high-rise concrete buildings, have asbestos. And that means that only licensed, certified people can touch the ceilings and, you know, the walls where the asbestos is. And if you disturb it, I mean, it's more expensive because the people who go in there to do the repairs and the installation, they have to go in with full hazmat gear, you know, and that means that the people who live in those units or around those units, they have to vacate because it's an environmental hazard. And so, you know, it causes a lot of issues. And of course, you know, our members and the residents who live in these high rises, they're concerned. Because number one, it means they may have to move out. It means they got to pay more money because the unit owners are the ones who have to pay for these repairs under the way, you know, condominiums are created.
Now, we had a couple on yesterday, they were residents of the Marco Polo building, and they shared with us that they're very close to getting buy-in from the owners. I think they needed 65% of the owners. That was their threshold, and I think they've got 63. So they're getting closer. My understanding is a lot of folks don't want mandatory sprinklers. They want a choice.
Yes. And that's what I'm hearing from a lot of our membership, mainly because you have a whole lot of associations who are very diligent. And even before the Marco Polo fire, they took steps, you know, to make their buildings safer. I mean, if you regularly maintain and repair your building, then, you know, you're in pretty good shape. And one thing that the committee, the Residential Fire Safety Advisory Committee that the chief, headed, came up with this matrix. And I think that the matrix, that's part of the new order, the amendment to the new ordinance, is a good thing. And it's online. It's on our website. It's on the city website. It's on the fire department website. It gives you a guide of what are the minimum requirements so that your building can be safe. And we've had our association members and others look at that matrix, and they've been going through their buildings, and they've been looking for vertical openings. I mean, until I was on the committee, I didn't know what a vertical opening was. And, you know, vertical openings, you know, cause the fire to move up, you know, vertically. And these are the holes that are created in a building when you make a high rise for the pipes and the conduits to fit into. And the building code requires you to put sealers around it. When your building is 30, 40 years old, that seal breaks or it deteriorates. And so then you have air that can move up through these holes that are inside your building. And that's an easy enough thing to go out and just send your maintenance people out and check them and, you know, repair the seals. And that's cheaper than retrofitting. And, you know, so now that, you know, the buildings know that this is one of the things on the matrix, you know, they can go out and they look. I mean, we've got people going, checking their doors to make sure they're fire, you know, safety, fire rated. And, you know, making sure that they have standpipes that are, you know, in their stairwells. They're doing emergency evacuation signs. They're having meetings with their owners, you know, to educate them. And, you know, I think, you know, the fire, the Marco Polo fire, it just created a higher awareness of issues that, you know, the buildings need to look at. And, you know, and it just, you know, adds to what is like an ongoing maintenance and repair schedule. And there was a hearing on December 18th, and there were lots of buildings who came and testified and said, you know, even before the fire, we were doing this and that. And after the fire, we, you know, we're doing our elevator maintenance because if, I mean, our elevator renovations, because if you do your elevator renovations, that means that you have to bring everything up to code. Your fire alarms, your smoke alarms are all kind of connected to each other. They talk to each other. And that's a good thing. And on the matrix, that means that you get more points, your building is safer. And so, you know, I think that the Marco Polo fire, if it had any type of positive results, it reinforced the people who were taking care of their buildings, and it created awareness for the people who maybe weren't doing everything they could do, but now they know. And now, you know, they know what direction they have to go to make their building safer.
And that's the awareness that we're talking about this morning. And if you're just joining us, our guests in the studio are Socrates Protakos, Assistant Chief of the Honolulu Fire Department, Honolulu City Council Member Carol Fukunaga, and Jane Sugimura, President of the Hawaii Council of the Association of Apartment Owners. We'd like to hear from you, the listener. Our numbers are 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689.
A caller, Kenneth, has submitted a question. He wants to know, is what being proposed to provide an exemption to the building code requirement for sprinklers in existing buildings, but each individual building entry has to apply for an exemption?
Under the current draft, I don't think we've gotten that far. So these are alternatives that are currently being discussed in the context of a mandatory retrofit requirement. And, you know, as Jane pointed out, and as Chief Bertakos has noted, you know, this whole process of safeguarding your building, taking the steps to be generally in compliance, you know, with all the fire code requirements is something that we're looking at to see whether can you fulfill enough of the fire prevention and safety features that will otherwise qualify you and your building for an exemption. So it's not, you know, really in any kind of written form yet, but it's part of the discussions that have been taking place.
We have a caller on the line, Mick from Chinatown. Mick, can you hear me?
How are you?
Yes.
I was reluctant to call because some of the questions that I wanted to state, the lady and, of course, the assistant fire person was there, was mentioning. My background, let me say, I was raised in a my father was a fire inspector and a fireman. And later in Seattle, I became a business owner of security fire and that sort of thing. One of the things I haven't heard, unless I was on hold and missed it, was we had an issue in Seattle, same type of issue with expense. The city first arranged a financing method for helping those individual owners find a way to have a low-interest method of financing these choices that they had to make. In addition to that, on the other end, the smaller businesses that were able to do that type of work, that were in fire and burg and that sort of thing, the liability insurance was so extraordinarily high that many of them, I simply turned away and could not compete. That's only the beginning of this iceberg that you've awakened in me by listening to this, but I think it's great that you're tackling this. I wish you could do it faster, but I know the wheels of government don't necessarily turn at the speed we'd like. But my hat's off to the people that are at least talking about it. Like I said, I only have 10 seconds left, so I've got to end this, but there's many more areas that I could go into and would love to. But I'd like to put those questions of anything that has been done in reference to financing for users. We'll start there and stop there, I guess. That'll be my comment for now.
I guess one thing that we can say is that among the financing alternatives that has been proposed by the administration was a low-income loan, you know, type of program. And we did include that set of provisions in Bill 107, which we introduced as a discussion draft to give condo owners a chance to take a look at whether they thought it would meet their needs or not. At this point, we have not had that much discussion with city agencies about that particular program. They are looking at tax credits and property tax relief, and I think trying to estimate what the city contribution might be. And I think we would be looking to see whether or not, you know, city, state, and other entities might be able to come up with recommendations for a broader range of assistance if it turns out that the costs are, you know, on the high side, like the $30,000 to, you know, $40,000 range, if you take into account some of those bigger buildings with many more features.
It's pretty likely that those costs would weigh in on the high side. You referred to one building with more than 400 units times 30,000. I mean, we're starting to get into some big money, aren't we?
Very big money. And so, you know, as Jane pointed out, you know, for many of the members of her organization, you know, that is one of the things that is weighing most heavily. And I think people seem to be saying now, if you gave us a choice, we will take the necessary steps to safeguard our buildings, to do more of the education and fire prevention actions that can help us avoid having to necessarily install all of the retrofits in individual units. So I think, you know, the direction is really a good one because people are trying to determine what they can do on their end to help reduce some of the potential costs.
We're right around the corner for the legislative session to start up. Is anyone aware of any legislation?
Yes. We did talk to Glenn Rakai's office, and I have to follow up, but we did send him the old bill that was introduced in 2005 for the state tax income tax credit, and I will follow up on that. I did talk to his office, and they told me that they would, you know, introduce a bill. We also have a bill that is, and we have a legislator on the House and the Senate side to introduce it, to amend the condo statute, which is 514B. And one of the provisions in the bill allows an association to borrow money. But in order to borrow the funds, you need to get 50% owner's approval. And a lot of the high-rise buildings around the Waikiki area have people who live in Asia, China, Japan, and Korea, who, you know, and so it's very difficult for them to meet the 50% threshold. So there is a bill that is going to amend 514B on that provision that allows condominiums to get a loan that if there is a legislative mandate, which means state or county, that requires a health and safety installation or repair, and if you have, I think the draft says 20% of your owners live outside of the country, then the 50% requirement is waived. That means that the board can go ahead and move to borrow the funds to do this health and safety repair that is legislatively mandated. It's a very narrow statute, as you can see. And it is targeted at an issue like this mandatory retrofitting.
It's likely that a number of listeners are affected in some way by this. So we're asking you, the listener, do you live in a building without sprinklers? Have you ever experienced a residential fire? Would you live in a condo in a building without sprinklers? We'd like to hear from you. The numbers are 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689. With us in the studio are Socrates Bratakos, Assistant Chief with the Honolulu Fire Department, Honolulu City Council Member Carol Fukunaga, and Jane Sugimura, President of the Hawaii Council of Association of Apartment Owners. We have a caller from Kauai with a question or comment. Chris on Kauai, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
What's on your mind?
Well, ever since I heard of the fire, I thought about what our poor firefighters had to do as far as running up 26 stories with all their equipment to save lives. And that's why I'm so much in favor of sprinklers. I just thought they went above and beyond in trying to put out that fire.
No argument there, Chris. Thanks for your call.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for that comment. It was very rough, and we probably haven't told the full story, but we came pretty close to losing some of our folks while we were trying to take care of everybody else. And that's why we are pretty adamant that fire sprinklers are a good safety feature. And, you know, we always, the fire department looks at safety. We're not always the people who are considering costs as much as everybody else, although we understand that needs to be done. And we thank you for your support on that.
Chief, what are the risks faced by firefighters in a fire like that beyond higher than ladders can reach?
Well, we have to go up there somehow, whether the elevator is working or not. And if a fire spreads, it's tough. We have to get a lot of folks there. There's a lot of things that must be done. We're getting people out. We're controlling the lobby and the elevators. We're getting a water supply. There's just a lot of equipment that's got to get up there. We got to make numerous attempts to search, maybe break into doors or units, carry things in and out, move hoses and other equipment around, change our air packs out, give people rests, continue to lead people out, carry them up and down, go up and down stairs and elevators, communicate everything that we're doing to each other. That's a lot of jobs that get done in a high-rise fire. That's our business to do that, of course, but sometimes people don't realize how difficult that can be in a big fire.
Now, both Chris and I have been out as part of a news team going out covering fires like this. I recall covering the first interstate fire, and that fire broke out, I think, on the top floor, and the elevators didn't work, and your crew had to hike up the stairwell in order to fight that fire. But fortunately, that was, I think, an office building. It happened in the daytime, and so it was a little different of a circumstance that there was no fatalities in that one, but there were firefighters that were put in danger that day.
Yeah, that's true. We almost lost a couple of folks that I know very well. That one started on the 15th floor, also burned the 16th floor, including the fire department and Federal Credit Union that day. And that was very tough. I was a captain. I remember it very well. We did a lot of drilling after some laws came out after that one, including the business building high-rise retrofit law. And thank you for remembering that. These fires don't, big ones don't happen so often, but they really cause us all to think and see where we are again with our safety measures.
Here's a written question from Debbie in Honolulu. Have they considered reverse mortgages so that when they pass apartments on, it can be taken out when it's passed on to heirs?
That certainly sounds like, you know, a proposal that is worth considering. I know that when we first had the September forum, one of the things that was talked about was potentially establishing some sort of fund. And at that time, we were talking about bond financing or other mechanisms. But I think the concept involved, you know, securing the financing to retrofit individual units. And if the individual owner could not really afford to repay that cost, that individual units could be sort of treated as when the individual owner either passed on or, you know, the unit changed ownership, then the cost of that retrofit could be collected at that time. And that was sort of the mechanism. So a reverse mortgage would be somewhat similar in terms of the overall concept. But I think, you know, we're looking at as many different alternatives as possible to give people, you know, a meaningful range that they can draw from, because we know that in condominium reserve requirements, buildings and condo owners already have to invest substantial amounts, you know, when major upgrades are required. And so they do have to go out and get bank loans. And, you know, while it's true you can spread those loans out over a long period of time, the fact that there are many kinds of improvements that have to be made means that it's never just a matter of paying off one loan. You're sort of always in the middle of maybe two or possibly three. So for condo owners, you know, it's not only the price of the unit, you know, when you originally purchased it, but over time, the maintenance costs are usually the things that are the most, they always go up. They never come down.
It's a complicated issue, and I'm sure a very complicated fix. One thing that I do have to ask is, as we think about these high-rise fires with the interstate building and with Marco Polo, because we saw the resources that were tapped that day, what if we had a second high-rise fire break out at the same time? How would the fire department be able to, you know, handle that? Because, you know, we worry about just one, but when you have the multiple situations going on.
Well, that's a very good question. We think about that, too. It wouldn't have to be a high-rise. It could be a big wildland fire, but we'd do our best. We'd send the resources we needed. We'd call people from off-duty. We have a way to recall people in the event of an emergency, whether it's a hurricane, tsunami, or big fire, and we would try to get as many people there as fast as we can. We might have to deprioritize other smaller incidents, but that's what we're trained to do, and we would address any of the big situations that came up, same as we do daily.
I understand that the department was having some discussion with HCDA about possibly a second fire station in the Kaka'ako area because of, you know, they're planning on adding so many more high-rises and increasing the density in that area. So I don't know if you're aware of what the update is on that.
I am aware of that. There's been some preliminary planning efforts as the draft environmental impact statements came about for Kaka'ako through the HCDA. The city and the department was asked if there would be impact to our services, and we said if there was 20,000 or 40,000 more people living in the area. And we said, yes, there would be. Typically, if a subdivision that large was opening up, like in Ho'opili or Coleridge, we would ask for another fire station and a couple more crews. So we wrote those responses to a consultant's letter to the HCDA. And we've had some early discussions with some of the bigger landowners and the administration and the HCDA to figure out where that might be. And we're constantly doing that, looking at the island and seeing how we can best serve the community, Kaka'ako out in Kapolei and anywhere else, too.
We're kind of moving toward the end of our program. We've got a few minutes left, and I want to sort of get each of us thinking about summarizing what we've been talking about over the past hour. And one of the things that comes to mind most clearly is that we're kind of at the intersection of safety and money, in a sense, right? You know, how much money, what is the price of safety? What is the how can you guarantee safety? And as you've dealt with this many times, Jane, how much is it going to cost?
Well, you know, what is in the new amendment, the matrix, I think the matrix is key. And I'm very grateful to the fire department for bringing that up. And it's not that they created it, because something similar to the matrix is used in various jurisdictions on the mainland, the life safety evaluation, and that is being used as a safety tool. And I think that is very valuable. It has, and I've heard comments from people who have looked at the matrix. I mean, and they're very grateful, because it's a roadmap. It tells them what they got to look for, and it focuses them and their resources on certain things. It's not like, oh, well, you know, just go out and make your building safer. And it's like, well, how do you do that? And the matrix is a good tool. And I think if nothing else comes out of this discussion, I think that that matrix is something that is valuable to the buildings in order to improve their safety. And a lot of them are using it. They're taking advantage of it. They're looking at it. They're talking to their professionals and their contractors, and they're doing something about it. And I think that's a good thing.
Jane, do you find that some apartment owners are taken by surprise by how much things like sprinklers, safety measures, are going to cost them?
Yes, I mean, I think they're you know, kind of shocked, and mainly because, you know, they have other challenges.
Sure.
The older buildings have a lot of challenges. I mean, they have to replace or maintain their roofs. The big thing in concrete buildings is spalling. I mean, that's $1 million job. And you're talking about elevator renovations for a 30, 40-year-old building. And that's also a multi-million-dollar job. You know, so these – and window replacements, you know. And so these are not cheap, you know, projects. So, you know, every time, you know, another issue comes up that's going to be more expensive – I mean, it does create, you know, concerns and challenges for people who live in high-rise buildings.
Chief, you're dealing with a lot of safety issues and educating the public. What would you most like the public to understand?
I'd most like the public to understand that our buildings are going to be here for a long time, for our children and our grandchildren. And we've got to maintain them, so we have to educate ourselves on those solutions. We'll decide all together. Make sure that you help your fire department to do everything it can to respond to those fires and to help to prevent them. Learn about your own buildings and their individual characteristics. See how you can best prevent fires and enable life safety right now, even as we continue to look at the developing technology in the future and figure out all together how we can best keep fire safety in the forefront for our buildings for a long time to come.
Council member, are you optimistic?
I'm hopeful. Let's put it that way. I think we've gotten a lot of good response thus far. You know, we posted everything that we have received. And so in the interests of greater education, more transparency, I think this tragedy has caused us to kind of move forward with very methodical kinds of steps to give everyone a chance to weigh in. And I'm hopeful that as part of this discussion, this conversation, so to speak, we will end up with something that, most condo associations and condo owners can live with and can actually implement.
Our guests have been Jane Sugimura of the Hawaii Council of Association of Apartment Owners, Honolulu City Council Member Carol Fukunaga, and Socrates Bertakos, Assistant Chief with the Honolulu Fire Department.
And we thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show.
If your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still contact the Talkback line with your comments. That number is 808-792-8217. Thanks to everyone for listening to The Conversation. I'm Chris Vandergrift.
And I'm Catherine Cruz.